now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Steffi Barnett. Today we talk to the writer and director of Drag Baby.
And someone doesn't care much about men. We talk to Sarade about her new book, Amma.
Plus, hold on to your hats, it's the gayest time of the year.
Eurovision is upon us all today, right here on Shout Out. You're going to get off my lap now.
I tried to change the tune, but it just sounded like I was out of tune. I knew what I was trying to do.
So, hello, everyone.
Good evening.
It's rather nice compared to last week, where none of us were here.
Well,
virtually.
It was a pre-record
show. We never do pre-record shows normally.
No.
Very rare.
But it transpired that we needed to for...
It did. There was a lot to talk about as it happened.
Yeah. So what happened to your script at the beginning there? You haven't had you jump round and lean over my shoulder before.
No, I was busy chatting and didn't open it.
Oh.
So I failed.
She's just very unprofessional.
I know.
I mean, the listeners don't know that.
I just wanted to sit on your lap and read yours.
I just wanted to cuddle Andy.
So you're getting in the Eurovision spirit, aren't you? That's what it is.
Yeah, I really think Ollie's going to do it. I really think
so. He is not the odds on favourite.
No, I know. Well, he is here.
I will tell you, I've actually got lots of the tracks in today's show, and I've got some interesting bits for you at the end. But I thought what was brilliant was Ireland got through.
Yep.
I don't know if you saw, but it was a They Them that was performing.
Yes.
With a lovely, and we were watching, and Carl went,
"How wonderful!
They're wearing the trans flag." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, so they are," which is quite cool because a lot of them got told off for doing things that
political things, isn't it? They class that as political.
Yeah, yeah. They've been attacked by the Catholic Church in Ireland.
Oh, of course they have.
Is it Bambi Thug?
Yeah, Bambi Thug. That's it. Have I got the track in later? Yes, I have. Yeah, the track's coming up after just before the news. So you can hear it. It's a very interesting track, I have to admit. I've also got Baby Lasagna for you as well, which is odds on favourite to win along with another one. So
Baby Lasagna.
I love the fact that...
The song's called Rim Tim Taggy Dim. I was on favourite along with Switzerland, who have got the code, which I can play you at the end of the show, but I've not actually got that tracking because we don't have enough tracks in. So we had to have Ollie Alexander in it.
Everyone's going to be crowded on their telly on Saturday evening because Shooty is back.
Indeed. Yes. Doctor Who comes back for its new series.
I think it drops on
iPlayer and then it drops on BBC One later.
Eurovision semi-final still carry on tonight, 8 o'clock. I don't know if you've seen, but during the rehearsals that were going on, Israel got a lot of booing.
That was sad. Yeah. That was sad.
Yes, apparently it's enshrined in Swedish law that you have a right to protest, so they're gearing up for lots of protests.
Yeah, well, they brought in police from surrounding countries.
They did, yeah. Mm. Yeah, which is a bit of a shame because, you know, it's not so... It's not what you really think about with Europe.
I remember there was controversy when Moscow, obviously, there was no Ukraine war going on, but in 2006, Moscow held the Eurovision Song Contest because they'd won it the previous year.
Yeah.
And there were people protesting about the homophobic situation in Russia. And there was a lot of tension there. I think Graham Norton mentioned it on the television coverage that evening. So, Yeah, political.
So second half of the semi-finals tonight, and then I don't know where Doctor Who is in the schedule actually, but Eurovision,
I think before Eurovision.
Marvellous. A whole evening.
That's going to be very, very LGBT plus telly on Saturday.
I said to my boss at work, I said, "You do realise this is our equivalent of the FA Cup, you know? You're just going to lose us for a whole week." He thought it was absolutely hilarious. So.
That's brilliant.
That's funny.
Now, Drag Baby.
Yeah.
Mm. Does it need introducing or should I just play it?
Hit the button, Mr. Okay. Shilton.
Hit the button.
Here we go.
Well, you know how we like a little bit of drag on Shout Out, and I'm joined by the writer and director of Drag Baby, described as hilarious and heartwarming new play on queer friendships and chosen family. I'm joined by director Joseph Winner and writer Grace Carroll. Hope I pronounced your names correctly.
I think, yeah, you pronounced mine. I'm not sure. I'm never sure how to pronounce Joseph's name.
It was close. Weiner.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Of course.
It's only
like
got one N. See, the clue's in the amount of N's, isn't it? Right, over to you, Grace. How did you get into writing?
So I grew up and I think the first thing I ever wanted to be was an actor, which I think is super common when you're young, because you just see that, you know, on the telly, and that kind of learned quite quickly. I didn't actually like being on stage, which is not a good requirement for being an actor. And then I kind of figured out that this job of writer exists. And I thought, oh, I think I'd like to do that. I think I'd like to be not having the pressure of being on the stage and doing the show, but kind of deciding where everything goes. And I kind of got into theatre because my dad used to write a kind of local Amdram panto plays. And I would just sit by him and just obsessively watch him do the scripts of it. And I just thought, oh, this is super cool, of kind of putting the whole story together and, yeah, putting it in. And I've just kind of been writing since then, really, just sort of plugging away at various bits and bobs.
It must be a great feeling for writers when you see that your thoughts and that your imagination and life experiences going actually on stage and seeing that. It must make you feel really proud.
It does. It does. It's always a weird thing, because I think when you're writing, you're so in your head, and you kind of sometimes you don't even think about the finished product, because you're just looking at the words on the page, and you're not always thinking about the thing of. Often when you're writing, you don't know if anyone's going to perform it. So you're not really thinking about that. You're kind of just thinking about the story and how everything's going, and you're kind of absorbed in the world. So when it's people are actually sort of asking you questions about it and performing it and, you know, acting your words, it's always really surreal, but always kind of great, because that's why you do it. That's why you write, is because you hope hope someone's going to pick it up and want to direct it and want to act it. So yeah, it's always a really good experience when it actually gets made.
Joseph, now you're directing it, so let's go back to you growing up before you got into directing. Were you always up for the school play and like wanting to show off and dress up and stuff?
Definitely dressing up. I think I did more dressing up in my bedroom than I did anywhere else. I guess I've just always loved drama as a subject. I remember when I was a kid, my cousin was a few years older than me, and she used to do a lot of youth theatre and musicals. I remember being taken to her doing Les Mis when I was about 8, and my grandma in the car explained to me all about what prostitutes are so that I could understand the story. So I guess I was exposed to theatre from quite a young age. And and then any opportunity at school that came up, I jumped straight in. But I actually think, like, socially as a kid, I was quite introverted. I didn't like being... my mum tells me apparently I didn't have many friends when I was at school. and I didn't like being in big crowds. And I still don't really. And I guess I found that, like, being in a drama club or being in a play, and I work with a lot of young people now and find this with them as well, it sort of gives you that opportunity to show off and be a bit extroverted and dress up and put costumes on in a way that feels really safe and supported. I think that's what sort of attracted me to it in the first place.
When did you decide to actually go into the directing part? Because that's quite a hard job, isn't it, directing a full-blown theatre production?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I had quite an unusual route into it, in the sense that I joined a local youth theatre when I was about 11. And, we would meet up every week and do some improv and do some plays and stuff. And it was all community led and run by volunteers. And I think one year I was about 14, and one of the drama teachers, who's now a really good friend of mine, was directing the youth musical that year in the sort of the junior group below me. She had to drop out for some reason, and I just got asked if I wanted to take it over. So that was the first thing I directed when I was about 14. And I think I guess as a teenager, I was a bit of a strange teenager in that I was like really into Excel spreadsheets and really into like being really organized. So I quite liked, like, I loved putting a rehearsal schedule together, which is probably like now the most boring part of my job. But I just got the bug for it. And then that group started letting me direct all sorts of things. So I started doing pantos and farces. And I think by the time I was about 16, I was directing plays with the adults as well. And I think the thing that I loved about it and the thing I still love about it is being in that position where you just get to bring all of the elements together. So you get to work with a full creative team, you know, designers, musical directors, choreographers, brilliant actors. And you then just get to sort of, I don't know, I guess stitch all those elements together to create a production. And there's still nothing more exciting to me than when you bring all those elements together and then you get to sit in the audience and watch it with them on opening night and see how they react to it. I just think that's one of the best feelings in the world.
I think you've just answered my next question, which was, do you get to play a cameo in a play that you're directing because you can't keep off the stage? You just answered that because you said you sat in with the audience. So I guess not.
Yeah, no, I'm actually quite happy to be away from it. I've just been directing this week a youth production with some 11 and 12 year olds. And we had our opening night last night, and at the end they did their bows and then they all pointed towards me as if to say thank you, which was lovely. But suddenly everyone was looking at me, and I'm actually not a big fan of being the center of attention. So I'm very happy for them to have the attention and me to just sit and enjoy it.
Okay. Right, Grace, now you've got the delicate job of describing to us the play without giving too much away.
Yeah, so I'm going to try. So the play is about a drag queen called Dan, the drag name is Miss Phoenix, who's kind of reaching that point in their career. They're in their kind of mid to late 30s, and they're still doing sort of basement clubs, and they've got this dream of getting on a sort of drag reality show that we never name as the very famous show that's on BBC Three, but it's kind of hinted that it's that very famous drag reality show. And he's got a chance to be on it, and he kind of feels like this is the thing that's going to make him rich and famous. And at that time, his ex-girlfriend, his only ever girlfriend from when he was a teenager, shows up back in his life and asks him to be a sperm donor so her and now her girlfriend can have a child. So it's kind of him making that decision. The whole kind of play is kind of hinges on whether he's going to make this decision, and kind of that point in your life in your 30s where you kind of think, oh, I've really got to decide now whether or not I'm actually going to have a kid. Is this going to be the thing that I do? And I always think it's an especially interesting question for sort of queer people, because it's a lot more complicated when you want to have a child, and the general hoops that you have to go through and how you decide to construct your family. So that's kind of what it's about. With that all happens quite quick within the play. So I'm not giving, and it does take a lot of kind of weird twists and turns throughout it, and takes you places that
sounds quite an emotional roller coaster. Is that the case?
It is a bit of an emotional roller coaster. I think it's quite light in a lot of places. There's also quite a lot of a kind of drag woven into the play. So there's different characters. There's also a character called Nathan, who's a kind of younger drag queen and is a bit more kind of avant-garde than Dan. And he doesn't, they don't really agree. They're a bit suspicious of Sally, Dan's ex-girlfriend, who arrives on the scene, and they do, their drag acts are kind of interwoven within the play, and so is Dan's, and it's kind of all set within this kind of quite small drag club. So there's kind of quite light moments as well. I think there's funny moments, there's sad moments, there's kind of a little bit of everything, I think. I don't know if Joseph would agree with me on that one.
Yeah, I described this to Grace and she said it's okay for me to call it this, but I've been describing the play. It's a bit like a really good soap opera episode, in that, you know, you can really be giggling and laughing at one moment and enjoying what's happening, and then suddenly it just hits you with a really poignant plot twist or monologue. So yeah, I think if you're really into really, really good episodes of EastEnders, then it kind of has that vibe to it, I think, this play.
Grace, what you said is really enticing without giving too much away of the plot. So I think you did a good job for our listeners about tempting us all without giving away too much. Now, we're running fast out of time here. So what I'd like to ask you, Grace, have you got anything planned for the future? Have you already started penning your next play, or are you just going to have a break a moment?
Started penning my next play. It's very different from Drag Baby, but it's kind of similar in that kind of writing about people and relationships. And this the next play I'm writing is all about climate change and tensions between buying individual and kind of individualism and collectivism. So it's kind of very different in the themes, but I feel like I really like writing things where it's kind of two characters and it's kind of based really on their relationships and their kind of the complicated history between them, which is
we'll
a lot
have to
of,
get you back on for the next one then.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, so it's kind of, that's a lot of what I write about, really, is just two people sort of struggling to connect with each other and struggling to reconcile their pasts and things, which is kind of a lot about what Drag Baby is, but with a lot bit of drag and a bit of bit of love in there as well,
bit of fairy dust on yeah, Drag Baby.
Exactly.
Joseph, so what have you got planned? Are you already planning your next play that you're going to be directing? Do you know what you're going to be doing?
Yeah, sort of yes and no. I mean, so most of my work is new writing, so I love working with new plays. I love meeting writers who've got an idea, maybe written nothing or a first draft, and sort of going on the journey with them. So when I first met Grace, I think Grace had written, there was a full draft of the script, Grace, wasn't there? But it's gone through quite a lot of changes since then.
Yeah. So, I think we started connecting in 2020 and I was deeply depressed and didn't think theatre would ever happen again. And Joseph was really good at sort of encouraging me. You're really good at working with new writers.
Oh, thank you. So my thing at the moment is I've got lots of really, really exciting up and coming, emerging queer writers. They all happen to be queer, that I'm working with at the moment, who have got really exciting projects that are sort of in the seed stages. Nothing announced at the moment. But lots of exciting stuff in the works.
Ooh, well, keep us in mind, won't you?
Oh, I absolutely will.
For the next ones, we need you back on. We like all this excitement. How can people get tickets, the website, and your socials, please?
Yeah, so you can get tickets on Pleasance Theatre London, their website. So you just Google Pleasance Theatre Drag Baby. You can get tickets there. We are on socials. We are, and double check the exact one, on Instagram, we are Drag Baby The Play. Drag Baby was taken. So we are Drag Baby The Play on Instagram. And on what everyone is still calling Twitter, but it's still is officially X, we are also Drag Baby The Play. So come find us there. And I'm also at, I'm just on at Grace Carroll, double R double R on Twitter as well, if you want to find me.
Okay. Joseph?
And I'm at Joseph Weiner, with one N at the end.
Thanks.
Mainly on Twitter X, so come say hello on there.
Okay, no one calls it X, nobody. Elon Musk was doing a canvassing votes to see who preferred Twitter and who preferred X, and he's saying, oh, X is obviously the best one, and you know,
it'll always be Twitter for me.
It will, to everybody on the planet except him. Thank you, Joseph Weiner and Grace Carroll, for your time, and break a leg both.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been lovely chatting.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Oh, well, there you go, Terry. That's a nice intro to the news for you. That's Bambi Thug and Doomsday Blue. Yeah, they are a they, them, and they are representing Ireland with that song.
No wonder the Catholic Church kicked off.
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting set. When they were on stage, big nails, like a witch. And I think, Ez, didn't you just say they had a witch, nickname or something?
Oh, gosh. Yes, I did.
So I just put you on the spot.
Bear with. Bear with, caller. Hold the line. Yeah. Yes, their nickname is Goth Gremlin Goblin Witch. That's easy to say, isn't it? Imagine after having a couple of shots. Goth Gremlin Goblin Witch. I really loved that song, genuinely.
Did you?
Yeah, it reminds me of when I first heard, it's nothing like the same sort of music, but Dowdy Fryer, who was with Iceland, their band is absolutely fantastic. I thought they were going to win, but that was in lockdown, so I really like those unique sounds. I'm quite excited for this.
Well, plenty more to come. I've got a bit of baby lasagna for you coming up after the
I do like a baby lasagna.
But before that, should we get some news headlines?
Why not? This is Shoutout News. Welcome along.
The activist network Queer AF, with the support of a broad coalition of LGBTQI+ organisations, including Stonewall, Hadaya, LGBT Muslims, Diva Magazine and Gendered Intelligence, have come together to declare this week as Trans History Week. Sophie Perry, writing at Pink News, reports that a series of powerful billboards in major cities across the UK will make trans history visible to the public and mark the first Trans History Week. Marty Davis, founder of Trans Plus History Week, said, "Everyone is talking about trans plus people, but few trans plus people are able to tell their own stories. That's what Trans Plus History Week is here to do. If we deny people their history, we deny them their humanity. Writing about this moment set me on a path to learn more and make our history accessible to everyone." May 6th was chosen as the first day of the History Week to mark the anniversary in 1933 as one of the first atrocities of the Nazi regime that had taken power in Germany and which would eventually lead the world into a bloody war and Holocaust in which over 50 million people perished. This atrocity was the burning of the trans-positive and gay-positive Institute of Sexology in Berlin. The gay and bi men's pagan religion of Antinous worship also marked this anniversary, noting the religion of Antinous commemorates the book burnings and the ransacking of the world's first gay scientific institution, foreshadowing the gay Holocaust. On this day in 1933, the Nazis stormed and shut down the Institute for Sexual Science, which had been founded by Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld in Berlin in 1919. In collaboration with the Scientific Humanitarian Committee, the Institute was founded for the research of human sexology, primarily for the purpose of repealing paragraph 175, which was the German law that made homosexual acts illegal. The work of the Institute was a reflection of the widespread gay liberation that prevailed in Germany after World War I. It was specifically targeted by Adolf Hitler as one of the foremost degenerate depravities of the Weimar Republic, with the Führer vowed to eradicate.
Now, it's another consequence of the Bush-Blair war on Iraq in 2003. Supported by some right-wingers and hawks, the war on Iraq toppled a nasty dictatorship, but one which did not persecute women or LGBT plus people with quite the severity of the chaotic, despotic rule that followed the end of the Saddam Hussein era. The Peter Tatchell Foundation and All Out International have reported that Iraq has now enacted far more vicious anti-LGBT plus legislation than had been on the statute books previously. Mimicking the authoritarian Russian state's clampdown on minorities, now even the mention of LGBT plus existence is a criminal offence. All Out reports that the Guardians of Equality movement are on the ground in Iraq, providing support and cover for people whose lives are now at risk. Francois Zanik for the group said that funds are desperately needed, and you can donate at the website of campaigns.allout.org.
BBC Points West reports that a trans woman from the West Country, has said that she is disappointed and let down by the police after reporting that she had been raped. Lee Madden, reporting for the BBC locally, said that the woman has anonymity for life as a victim of sexual offence. The BBC is not saying where in the West of England. The woman said the experience at the front desk did not go well. She claims they initially did not believe what she said, and she had to repeat it a couple of times. She said, they got a female officer to come in and see me. I think the only reason they brought somebody in was because I said to them, I know you're not going to do anything about this. A few months later, her worst assumptions were confirmed, and the police advised her they would not be referring her case to the Crown Prosecution Service. She was told this was due to a lack of evidence. A spokesperson for the College of Policing said, the college's guidelines stress that police officers should reassure the victim that they have done the right thing in coming forward, be non-judgmental and show empathy and sensitivity. Feminists and transfeminist activists, together with male rape activists, have all reported that prosecutions for this type of offence are worryingly low compared to the level of reports filed. If you have been affected by any of the issues raised in this article, then support is available from Rape Crisis in England and Wales on 0808 500 2222 or in Scotland 08088 010302.
Now, in religious news, Dignity USA, a network for LGBT plus Roman Catholics, says that with leadership from Aging with Dignity and other groups, they will soon be starting a project to help deepen connections amongst the members of different generations. They said, we are planning a kickoff event that will involve sharing stories of faith and identities by representatives of different caucuses. This is planned for June the 3rd, 8 o'clock Eastern Time or 5 p.m. Pacific Time in the US. More information and registration are coming soon. And you can find out more or book a space at allthews.dignityusa.org.
And in entertainment news, Pride Cymru, the Welsh capital's annual LGBTQI plus Pride celebration, takes place on Saturday 22nd and Sunday 23rd of June. As the plans come together for another event, the 25th anniversary event in the city, the organisers have announced their headliner for the prestigious Sunday main stage closer. They say headlining the Pride Cymru main stage on Sunday 23rd of June, it's lead singer of the multi-platinum-selling, Grammy-nominated, Brit Award-winning glam rock band Scissor Sisters and superstar performer Jake Shears. Since 2018, he has released two successful solo albums with several singles, reaching the BBC Radio 2 A-list. He's also toured internationally with the likes of Kylie Minogue and Duran Duran. Now he's sashaying his way to the Pride Cymru main stage, and we do feel like dancing. For further information about the event and for tickets, visit www.pridecymru.com.
Sounds fantastic. Now, finally, it's the grand finale of the Eurovision Song Contest this weekend, with apologies to listeners on stations that broadcast the show on a Sunday or Monday. There's been some bizarre ranting from right-wing groups about Eurovision for years, with some believing that it is an insidious arm of the European Union. Well, they're wrong. The contest is organised by the European Broadcast Union, a network of public service broadcasters across the continent, which was first created long before the EU existed to help allocate wavelengths. The Song Contest is one of the best loved of its endeavours. BBC Radio 2 in the United Kingdom will be covering the event. The grand finale is on Saturday night and will be televised by networks. Eurovision hopeful for Lawayo Muni is gay actor and singer Ollie Alexander, and we wish him all the very best for the event. Not everyone is happy though. The Broadcast Union's prohibition on Palestinian flags and its admission of Israel has caused some on the more radical wing of the LGBT plus movements to call for a boycott of this year's event. Well, we'll see what happens on the night, and if anyone makes any political statements, sometimes these things do get under the radar. But we will leave you with the wise words of 2015 winner Conchita Wurst from Austria, whose drag presence and torch song Rise Like a Phoenix caused a meltdown amongst homophobes. She said, my win is dedicated to everyone who believes in a future of peace and freedom. We are unstoppable, she said.
Well, so much is happening in LGBTQI plus news right now, so do keep us in mind on your travels around the LGBTQI plus internet this coming week. You can find us online with more news, features and podcasts at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr.
And Ezra Peregrine.
Sashay away.
Shoutout News. National and international LGBT news for you.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
Right, shall we have a bit of baby lasagna then, shall we?
What?
You want a bit of baby lasagna?
I love lasagna. Yeah,
this is brilliant. I love this track.
The Shout Out Podcast.
So it's between that and Switzerland. I'll play you a little bit of Switzerland one later on. What do we think?
I loved it.
Not keen on that one. So I'm out of sync.
Very degrading.
Diplomatic.
So you sure you're not just getting old now? It's, you know.
Maybe. What do you mean getting old? I think that moniker passed me a long time ago.
I mean, the way I look at it, the whole of Europe is voting. And I think Europeans would quite like that.
We are Europeans.
So, if you had to pick between the two, Baby Thug or Baby Lasagna. No, sorry, Bambi Thug or
Bambi.
Baby Lasagna. Which one would you go for?
Bambi Thug.
Bambi Thug.
Yeah. It's brilliant. Yeah.
No, Tara? No. See, not saying no by shaking your head on radio.
I know. Yes. I know. I was trying to work out a diplomatic way to say, no, don't like it.
Well, we've got another feature now, and then coming after that, I've got Ollie Alexander's one. Ooh. Which is obviously the UK entry. We don't have to qualify. We're one of the big three or four?
Five.
Who automatically get in because we're the founders, so which quite nice, I suppose. anyway, in the meantime, do you want to introduce your next piece?
Yeah, I talked to an
your
author.
In front of you now?
I don't need it yet until the end.
All right, okay.
Yeah, push the button, Andy. Okay. I'm joined by author Sarade De Silva. Now, before we get into your new book, Sarade, let's go back. Were you always into writing when you were a kid? Were you writing stories at school and that?
Yeah, I definitely was always into writing, and I was writing stories at school. I was quite obsessed with Medusa, and I would always like write about her or like rewrite her or just draw her.
Was that something you were quite prolific at? So you lent towards English lit, I guess?
Great. The Greeks, I guess. Like, yeah. I was really interested always in, like, women as monsters, I think. And she was, like, the first story I heard like that. But, yes, really liked writing as a kid and really liked reading and also watching movies. I kind of consider them all to be like the same thing, really.
Okay. Well, storytelling, I guess. Yeah.
Sure. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Mm. Let's get into your new book that you have out. Now, tell us a little bit that. Obviously, don't give too much away.
Okay. So, Amma is a multi-generational story. It's about three women in a family, and they grow up in their own timelines in different countries. So we start, the oldest in the group of them is Josephina, and she grows up in Singapore in the 1950s, 1940s. And then we go to her daughter, Sathara, growing up in Invercargill in New Zealand in the 1980s. And then to the granddaughter, Annie, who has just arrived in London in 2018, and she's on the doorstep of her uncle, who she's never met before.
Are you planning on doing a second book to follow this one, or is in your head, is this a trilogy?
No, this is a singular, this is just its own story, yeah. I think if I'm able, lucky enough to write another book, it would be different, yeah.
Ah, okay. Okay. Can I ask what gave you the inspiration for Amma?
Yeah, it was my gran dying, really. My grandmother died in 2019. She raised me, and I realized when she died that there were all these things I would never know about her, and I would never be able to know them now, and possibly even if she was still alive, I wouldn't know them because she probably wouldn't want to talk about it. And so I guess the book, in a way, is me sort of imagining women like my grandmother and all the things they might have done. Honest and painful, I think. And we stick very close to the three women as they grow up. I'm probably less, I mean, obviously empowerment is a good thing for women or for any marginalized person. But I'm kind of less interested in that than I am in, I'm interested in honesty, I think, and secrets. yeah. The book is also quite violent. I don't really know how to add that in, but it is that as well.
But you
yeah.
just did. Can I ask, how violent is it? Is it quite a bloody book to read?
No, I don't think it's quite a bloody book to read, but the women all, they have choices to make, and they tend to make quite reckless, some of them make quite reckless choices at certain times. Mm. I think it's a book where the women are not really afraid of being angry and taking the things that they feel they deserve.
Mm.
And I also think that some of the violence committed by these women, they would never think of them as being a mistake, the things they do. They wouldn't be some of them.
I don't think you'd be telling us too much about any more than you have. I think you've done a good balancing act there of sort of drawing us in and thinking, wow, I'd like to read that. That's
the goal. That's the goal. It's also about queerness kind of across generations and how that experience changes for the different characters. And I find that really interesting, you know, like what my privileges are as a queer person in 2024. Oh my God, I almost forgot what year it was. And how hard it would have, well, you know, the differences, yeah.
You alluded to this one being a standalone book. Does that mean that your next book is fresh and already you're thinking about what those characters will be and laying out the new book?
Yeah, I have started writing it, but it takes a lot of time and money to write a book, and I don't really have either of those things, so I'm trying to figure out a way to get some funding to write another book or find some opportunities to do that. It's very hard to write a book and have a full-time job, the new book has been started, but it is different.
Okay. But I don't want you to say too much about that because, you know, we got to get through AMA first.
Yeah, true.
If people want to get in touch with you and follow you, website, and keep an eye on this next book and also be able to purchase AMA, how do they go about that?
So I'm Sarai De Silva. It's just my name on everything. And the book is available now in the UK, in any bookstore, I think, pretty much.
Okay, yeah. And obviously Amazon. So people haven't got to hunt the bookstores. Actually, I don't know about you, but I do prefer a proper book to hold. There's something tactile about a proper book and having a bookcase with books in. I know that's old-fashioned, but I just prefer that.
No, I way prefer a physical book because it's actually nice to see the colours of it and to like what choices were made and to hold it and to carry it around. Yeah, I love it. I'm a big supporter.
I spend quite a bit of time in bookshops I just love them. There's a smell, isn't there, about new books and new print as well, so it's the whole thing, isn't it? Sensory experience.
Yeah, I agree. Also the spine of AMA is a rainbow, which I think is really cute.
Yeah, it's a shame. Well, everyone knows what a rainbow looks like even though you can't see that it's being held up, but it is beautiful. Yeah, beautiful colorings. Yeah. Right. Thank you so much, Saeed, for joining us here on Shout Out. Can't wait to actually get a copy of AMA and read it. I'm really intrigued now. Good luck with the next one.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for talking with me.
Thank you very much.
For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Ollie Alexander with Dizzy, which is this year's Eurovision entry for, as you said, the Royal...
The Wyoming.
You do that so well. If you're ever in need of a job, I'm sure they'll employ you.
I'd love to front the Eurovision Song Contest. I could be like Katie Boyle.
Scott Mills and Ryland doing it this year.
Are they?
Yeah, they're both.
Oh, for the BBC coverage. Yeah. Wow, yeah. That's brilliant.
Graham Norton is there for the main evening.
The main one, yeah. But they're also doing the extras.
Of course, I remember Tommy Rowe and his version of Dizzy back in, was that 65, 66?
I'm sure it was 65. I can't remember.
It was bubblegum, wasn't it? Like sugar, sugar, and yummy, yummy,
yes,
yummy.
Yes, yes. Bubblegum pop.
Yeah. I mean, as they're doing, with the semi-finals, as each one's going out to perform, they do this little flashback for the country and the most famous hits that country had in Eurovision.
Oh.
So, and they usually pick one or two and then they go to the latest act. Is how they kind of done their title graphics. So you get little snippets, like we have Bucks Fizz and the like in our. So, Fizz, but yes, that is that's obviously our entry, and Rim Tim Taki Dim is Croatia's entry. He's a bookie favourite. It's switching between them and Switzerland with the coach. Do you want to hear a little bit of the coach?
Oh, yes, yeah, go on.
Shout Out Podcast.
Yeah, a bit of a mixture of lots of different things, that, isn't it?
Really like that.
Very unique stereo separation on that one, if you're listening in stereo. The problem is, of course, when we do the podcast version, this show's going to sound very odd.
Yeah. lots of jump, but you can hear it all again at the actual contest. So if you're listening on the podcast and you miss the music,
I thought the Ellie Alexander track is really strong. Actually, I really thought that was a good track.
But do you think he sounded like Tiny Tim? What was the guy who shrilled in the 70s?
Oh, that's why I don't know what it is.
I really Tiptoe Through the Tulips. He played a ukulele. What was his name?
No.
I don't think it was Tiny Tim, was it?
Absolutely.
That's from Scrooge.
My mum. Yeah.
That's what comes of having a 71-year-old brain.
Oh, dear.
It's tragic, isn't it?
No, I don't anyway, know. But I thought it was a great song, actually.
Well,
all the best to Ollie.
The Code was odds-on favourite for quite a while, and then we had the semi-finals on Tuesday where Baby Lasagna did Rim Tim Taggy Dim, and all of a sudden it changed, and it's very level pegging with the two. So one of the two of them they reckon are going to win. I would obviously love us to win. I think I like the song. I don't think it's a very strong song compared to some of the ones we've had before. You listen to Spaceman and it's just an absolute belter of a song
that gets
the crowd going, and you know, fair dues. I mean, Ukraine got invaded and the like, and it's well known that it was a vote for
it was
that.
Political bad timing,
yeah,
because we were second, weren't we? We would have come first,
and we would have easily have won if Ukraine hadn't happened, which would have been amazing after all those years of.
And remember, we've met actually two of the, in fact, the last two Eurovision winners for the UK, haven't we? We've met Bucks Fizz, or the Fizz as they're called these days, and we've also met Katrina from Katrina and the Waves, who also won the Eurovision for us. Yeah,
yes,
yeah, and you've met me.
And I've met you, Steph. What country did you represent at Eurovision?
Oh, I don't know. Something far east of North Africa.
Well, I mean, occasionally there have been sort of North Africa. I think Algeria was in it one year. It depends who's paid their dues to the European Broadcast Union. But Jordan's been in it before.
Mm.
In fact,
Australia went out. In the
Australians get Eurovision, you see.
They do.
The Americans don't, but Australians do.
Yeah.
They understand Eurovision.
Well, the Americans never enter, do they?
No.
They're not part of the broadcasting.
I think the Eurovision's too subtle for them.
I think, I just think, in my experience anyway, Americans don't. Apart from LGBT plus QIA plus Americans, the most Americans don't understand camp, and that is one thing you can always say about the Eurovision Song Contest. It is a definition of camp.
I mean, and they played on it as well, because you know the way they usually have like a couple of co-presenters. They had two female co-presenters who obviously are well known in the country. They're obviously, you know, a bit like we'd have Graham Norton type.
Yes,
and there were a few things that were on stage, but one of them was she walked up to the barriers by the side of the stage, and she got a phone off a guy because she was saying, and you can also listen on the Eurovision Action app.
Grindr.
And the like. And as she's doing it, all the Grindr beeps are going off. And this guy's like, give me my phone back, give me my phone back.
Ah, that's funny. That's funny, yes.
And you kind of had to be a gay man who knew the sound of a Grindr alert to know that that was what it was.
When Sweden's
hosted. It was so funny.
I think that yeah. she had a line through, wasn't it? It was a, you're having a good time.
Yes. Yeah, basically, yeah.
I know that Sweden in the past has made reference to the gay and LGBTQIA plus contingent that enjoy Eurovision.
Oh,
they've
yeah.
done little gags and yeah. yeah
there were lots of them throughout. So, if I'm right, if you're listening live to us on Thursday, 7 o'clock, just coming up for 8 in a minute, I think it's on at 8.
It is.
BBC Two?
I think it's. I know it's on BBC Radio 2 and RTE 2FM in Ireland. I don't know about the television coverage.
Anyway, if you are heterosexual, be prepared to lose all of your gay friends this weekend, because they'll probably all be sat in front of the telly having a party, as often happens.
Yep, starting with Shooty.
Yeah.
Yes, Doctor Who as well. That's going to be fantastic. Yeah. yeah.
And of course, it's back to Russell T. Davies writing as well.
Mm.
Yeah, he's. I'm not dissing any of the others, but
well,
he is
and,
good.
And Disney playing the money.
Yes. Mm. You couldn't half tell. In the previous one, that the budget had gone up.
God, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, right, so just because, like, you forgot the top of the show, can I just warn you, you need your script in about 4 seconds. Are you ready?
Time's I'm out. Poised.
You're poised. She's poised.
Or do you want to sit on my lap again?
No, you're good to go.
You're poised.
Yeah, once is enough, Andy.
Right, that's it for another week. If you are interested in getting involved in LGBT plus radio, we would love to hear from you.
Yep, and me. I would like, can I have a job? We're looking for volunteers to get involved. If you are concerned about being on air, there's also plenty to do behind the scenes. Just get in contact with us. Find out more at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Well, next week we'll be back when Steffa's come down off whatever she's on. And I'll be talking to Tom Goss. But for myself, from Terry, from Ez, from Tara, and from Stephanie.
I don't know.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.